For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Good morning, everyone. I'm very happy to have giving the talk this morning Douglas Floyd, our Ancient Dragon Director and Chair of our Board. Thank you very much, Douglas.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's nice to see everyone here. Disappointed that a couple of new people have left, unfortunately, and especially because I had offered Taigen the opportunity to give this talk since he seems to be in great shape this morning and he's declined, so I guess it's me after all. I continually come back to considering why it is we do this Zen practice. It's kind of a strange thing to do where we have these ceremonies we practice, we sit for a pretty long time just facing a wall without moving. It's a fairly unusual thing we do. And so I keep coming back to try and not only perform the practice, but to figure out what it's all about. And perhaps it's a good thing. I think what I keep coming back to is a fairly traditional answer, that we come to Ancient Dragon, we do Zen practice in order to wake up to our lives and free ourselves from the anxiety and the sense of dissatisfaction that characterizes so much of our life. And Zen practice is the way we learn a new way of dealing with the fundamental problem that we encounter in our life, both on the cushion and off the cushion, and that is that ordinarily we are caught up in a perspective of being impoverished and threatened by life. And our thinking and emotions are shaped by a profound sense of insecurity and neediness. And as a result of that orientation, that perspective, we reflexively respond to situations and people in our life from a sense that something's missing or that something is going to be taken away from us or something's going to hurt us. And that neediness and sense of insecurity can relate to actual physical needs or desires. Desire for pleasure, and it can also relate to more abstract needs, like a desire for meaning in our life, a sense that we have some importance, we want to be valued, we want to be safe. But a second aspect of the problem that's related to it is that without recognizing it, we feel ourselves as being cut off from the world, fundamentally, that we are separate from the world and alienated from whatever's happening in our life and from the other people in it. We always come to other people in situations as if they were just someone or something out there that's going to do something to make us happy or hurt us. So that perspective turns our lives into a conflict, and we're constantly involved in self-defense. And as a result, anxiety and dissatisfaction are inherent in the way we come to the world. Zen practice is how we learn to wake up from this kind of thinking and behavior. And we engage in our lives in a more warm, open, and intimate way. You know, what happens is that when we practice Zazen, we sit down on the cushion, we sit in a chair, we sit upright, we don't move, we're facing the wall, we don't think about anything intentionally. and we regulate our breathing so that it's not fast and shallow. It's relaxed, full breathing. As soon as we adjust our posture and regulate our breathing like that, we become aware of the patterns of thinking and feeling that we have. We wake up to them, and as soon as we recognize them, something important has happened. We're no longer living within that perspective of neediness and defensiveness, and we undercut the force of the anxiety and sense of dissatisfaction that's involved with them. We can let the thoughts arise and fall without getting caught up in them. And as a result, we can just sit on our cushion and feel our posture and feel our breath without feeling the need to achieve something or protect ourselves from anything. And at the same time, as we wake up, let the thoughts arise, attain that new perspective that isn't caught up in the dissatisfaction and anxiety, it weakens. We wake up over and over, and during a period of zazen, as we become awake and then get distracted and come back, as the thoughts come up and fall away without our becoming engaged with them, they become weaker and more transparent, so we can see through that sense of separation from the world and from other people that characterizes so much of our life out off the cushion. The good news is that we are disposed to wake up. People do it in ordinary life, even though they don't recognize what's happened. And the good thing is that awareness and waking up leads to more awareness and more waking up, so that no matter how many times we become distracted in zazen, before long, we wake up again and step outside of that perspective of impoverishment and defensiveness. It becomes easier and easier during a meditation period, and as we continue the practice over time, we find that that experience of awakening happens more and more in our lives off the cushion. And that's our broader practice. We take this awakening and this off the cushion, so that more and more, both off the cushion and on the cushion, we step outside of the sense of neediness and anxiety. We wake up to find ourselves in the world and inseparable, intimate with other people. And we try to live from that new perspective, so that in our daily lives, we find ourselves more and more in different situations, waking up, and we can ask, recognizing, here I am, here we are with other people. And we can ask ourselves, am I going to respond to this moment from fear and resentment and neediness? Or am I going to engage out of friendliness and compassion and gratitude in that life, and learning to lead that life is why we come to Ancient Dragon and practice. That's short, but I'm going to leave it there. Does anyone have any thoughts about their own practice? Any difference of opinion or anything you'd like to say to supplement what you said?
I would just say thank you very much. That really is helpful to me, because I think I also sometimes think, how am I doing this? You know, or what is the empty... you know, and to be reminded of the function and how directly it is connected to those very human ways of approaching the world to what can, because I had that experience also of, you know, feeling more connected and not as needy or not as separate at times. But you lay it out in a way that I often don't think of as that direct connection, which is helpful. Thank you.
You know, an interesting thing for us is that I think everyone has the experience of, unfortunately, bringing that mind of neediness and impoverishment to their practice. Sitting, trying to do their zazen correctly and trying very hard to, you know, from an attitude that if I just sit here upright perfectly for 35 minutes without ever losing track of my breath a single time, I'm going to become very clear and calm. I'm going to become very happy. And I'm going to figure something out. And really, it's exactly the state of mind we're doing zazen to wake up from. But it's something that certainly can catch us. And I think, along with that, another way we get off track in zazen is we think of it as some sort of special experience when it's really something very natural. It's something we've experienced before but haven't really understood and learned to cultivate. And it's not inherently exciting or glamorous. It's just sitting here. And once we're off the cushion, it's just, you know, mopping the floor, typing an email, talking on the phone, which doesn't sound inherently glamorous or exciting, but that's where we find our awakening. It's a very different kind of experience than I think the expectation we bring to practice, which is that we will come to have some experience that will satisfy some need or stop us from feeling a certain way. And the interesting thing is about our practice and sitting is that the whole point is as we sit up straight and regulate our breath and become aware, we step outside of that thinking. Zazen is not about satisfying some need or having some special experience. It is about, we don't sit here and feel, oh, how satisfied I am, right? We have stepped outside of that whole game altogether. So it's very ordinary, but it's familiar, but it's different from the way we live most of our lives.
I think thanks. You brought up a lot of things that really hit me. I think for a long time, this could be a harsh word, but I was manipulating my practice, and one of the ways is that, like you were saying, I was using it to eradicate pain and not taking the whole experience. Crossing my legs, feeling the pain or everything that's around me, using it to manipulate thoughts and feeling a pain or certain thing. And now I just intake the whole experience. And it's interesting how you explain how we are out in the world more so than we sit. We sit very little, but when our practice really, to me, really interact, really gets cranked up is when we get off the cushion and go into the world. That's where I really can see someone ask me, well, how does this work? To me, I have no idea how this works. I really don't. But I'm a living witness that it works. That might sound crazy, but I can't explain it, but it's a beautiful thing. And I appreciate you.
Yeah, I like you, I don't know that I have a great... I've tried to come up with some sort of explanation for myself of how it works, and I'm not really satisfied. I think, you know, this is not a technique that has some sort of cause and effect relationship. If I do this, I will have this experience. If I do this, I will stop doing this. It's not really like that. It's a much more living, natural, inherent part of us, rather than a way that we manipulate our minds.
And not only that, but not having no expectations of it to either. I mean, when you're looking for something, like an answer or something, but if you just not have no expectations about your practice or about why is this or why is this happening, and just intake the whole thing of that why and become it, that is, it's just, it's magic. I can't. So many of my friends say, "Well, I don't know. Me and you are a weird dude, but we like you. It's something about you. It's something. Something is happening. When it happens, how it happened."
Well, I think it can help our relationships with other people. I think we learn to, again, step out of our usual patterns and wake up and find ourselves intimately connected with other people in this moment. It's not some sort of metaphysical oneness and undifferentiated thing. It's like we meet someone and it's almost like we're shoved forehead to forehead talking to them. And when that happens, you have to take them seriously and you have to pay attention to them. I think that, and I think people respond to that. David.
Thank you so much for your talk today. It was just spot on. And I like the way you say it's about, you know, this impoverishment, that our lives aren't rich. It's like we're just already rich and rich. We feel we're impoverished, at least that's how I hear it. It is so much what we do, not facing a wall, but what we do when we walk outside the Zendo. That's our practice. That's our practice. But the way you phrased it today was very touching for me, and I thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Also, thank you for your talk, because one thing I always appreciate about Dharma talks, it always comes back to, why are we sitting here anyway? But it is such a basic thing. It can be extremely easy and extremely difficult at the same time. And something you said, and it's something I've come across plenty of times, reading and talking and hearing about people's experiences with Zen, that is, you know, sitting here and noticing the patterns of your thinking. And I've always liked to think about it as, you know, being able to reorient yourself and being able to notice that when that happens, when you're sitting on the cushion. Uchiyama Roshi, who wrote the opening of Hand of Thought, has a really interesting diagram of sitting. Basically, that any diversions kind of come back to this baseline, but that coming back is always, it was the act of Zazen itself. I find that that's probably the most interesting part of this entire practice for me. It's, I will go off when I'm sitting. I will get distracted from paying attention to my breath or being here. But I always end up coming back. There is this coming back to this, just this sitting. And there is a moment of reflection and introspection of, oh, that's where I was at. This is what it feels like right now. I can't always call up certain emotions, but wherever I was at that moment, I can be witness to what that was and how I'm feeling it then and there, and that sitting there and literally practicing an instrument. I can practice here, coming back, feeling what that was, recognizing it for what it was, and so that when I'm actually out there in the world where I am all the time, oh, okay, hey, old friend, there you are. All right. Okay, we can chat a little bit.
Okay,
I gotta
do something. Yeah. Yeah, that's a very, when I talk to beginners to Zazen, I try to emphasize that for them, that they will get distracted and they can't see that as failure. On the other hand, you know, you will wake up, but you can't really take credit for it. It isn't something you've achieved, right? Because you were distracted, you were somewhere else, so you didn't do anything that brought you back. You woke up. And this sitting upright and paying attention to your breathing certainly support your ability to stay with it. But and in that respect, this is a yogic practice. I mean, the sitting upright, correct posture and good breathing help us to stay here and not get distracted so easily. But you can only remember to pay attention to your breathing and to adjust your posture after you've already waked up. And that's what kind of, for me, that's part of the mystery, that we're willing to sit here in this process, but it's not entirely something that we do. We don't wake ourselves up. We are waked up. It's like that phrase you read sometimes, is Zazen does Zazen. That's what's happening. The awakening awakens.
It's interesting that within your talk, it's like, I know it's not really part of it to have a gaining attitude of I'm doing this because I want to be that. However, I think there is a struggle and a need that draws people to the cushion or to search for something. So it's like there is a search for something. I don't know how to exactly get away from that as a motivation to do Zazen.
Well, I think there's a difference between having an aspiration or even making a vow to do something and being caught up in some idea that you're going to achieve something or attain something. You know, when I talked about that mistake and practice of achieving something, that's what happens to all of us sometimes, right? I mean, we feel lousy, we're unhappy, we're really anxious, and we say, okay, if I sit down on the cushion, I'm going to feel better. But, and I'm not going to say that there isn't some benefit to doing that, but that's really caught up in what we're trying to see through. That there.
Continuing on with what Kathy said, reminds me of the difference between assessment and grasping, in a sense, assessment or judgment, in a sense that, you know, assessment, this is where I am. And judgment is adding another layer to it, saying, well, this isn't the right place, I have to go somewhere else. And ask what you said about aspirations. Aspirations are different, so different. You know, I want something, but if I don't get it, I can let go of it. And the expectation or desire of wanting to be something, and then you're so attached to that object that you're trying to get, that's not, that you're not present, that you're just so involved in achieving that. And I find in my own practice, that's my biggest block, in a sense, is trying to achieve certain things rather than just letting it be. And it's like, for me, how it manifests itself a little bit when I get in my work routine. It's just like, you know, go, 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 do this and do that and everything. But the way I start my day is when I walk out of my back porch, as I go down the steps and to see the sky, and it's always beautiful. And just to be there in that moment without any expectations or desires makes that sky so beautiful. And that's, you know, it's just, and my desire to try to carry that through today, you know, that's what sometimes gets in the way. But that's what I'm taking, following through with what Kathy said, you know, this aspiration, and what you said about aspiration. And it's one thing to aspire to something, it's another thing to grasp onto it, try to attach ourselves to a desire. And it's interesting that when we let go of our desires, we actually achieve what we want in the first place. Ironic.
I appreciate your talk, Douglas, a lot, and this discussion is wonderful. Couple points just to echo. Just you're talking about going beyond defensiveness and sense of impoverishment. I think that's fundamental. And also, we can let it go when we're just willing to be present. And sometimes it gets subtler. It's like it's not necessarily that you get rid of that, but that, you know, we see through it, as some have said. And, you know, it can still come up again. So there's the thing you were talking about awakening again and again and again, is that we do fall into those patterns. We do, our karmic patterns of neediness, defensiveness, you know, are deep. And we each have our own version of that, but the point isn't to get rid of them, it's to see through it, and it does get subtler, but then we don't get caught by it so much. And what Kazan was saying about manipulation, I think that sense of manipulating our zazen, our most of our whole life we're, you know, trained to, you know, try and manipulate things to whatever situation we're in, or our own state of mind, or just to rearrange to get more of this or get rid of that, or some people get very skillful at manipulating and working at stuff. But as you were saying, we can let go of that whole game, or see our own patterns of it and not be caught by it. So anyway, thank you.
Yeah. So I think I may be off track, but I've always found that to be part of the great Bhajan and the Fox Kwan, you know, where the original question is, this old man who was really a fox, who's lived 500 lives as a fox because he answered a question incorrectly about whether the man of great practice is free from cause and effect, from personal karma, not only in his life, but will he be reborn or not? And because he said yes, that's right, he was reborn as a fox 500 times, and he comes to Bhajan, and Bhajan, after a conversation, says, "Will you ask me the question?" And the old monk says, "Well, is the man of great practice free from cause and effect?" And Bhajan says, there are a couple of translations, but he says that the man of great practice is aware of cause and effect, or even intimate with cause and effect. And that's our waking, that we're not caught up in these patterns that shape so much of our lives and how we see the world. We see through them. We're aware of them. They're going on, but we can see through them and step outside to have this larger perspective and wider palette of responses to to our life. Other comments or responses, anyone?
Okay.
Thank you, Douglas. No, I think that I can highly underestimate how subtle those kind of patterns, karmic patterns, are. And I was walking one time and I saw this sign, "This is a fragile ecosystem. Don't leave the path. Shortcuts can leave lasting scars."
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I find in sitting is to actually perceive the subtlety of those scars that I leave and not turn away from that and not grab onto that. But there's something about the subtlety of, you know, cause and effect that is profound. So I think you're pointing to that in your talk, and I just want to thank you for that.
Thank you. And I appreciate what you were saying that as well. You know, more and more my experience, and it may be off track, is that Zazen isn't this fixed method. This is Zazen. It's being awake and alive, and we respond to our experience and our scars. Who we are, what's going on right now, that living experience and inviting that is, it's not a technique, but it's being alive.
Mm-hmm. Like a verb.
Yeah, yeah.